episode of the Midlife Crisis Task Force. We pay tribute to Harold Ramis, and we spend some time waxing nostalgic. Welcome back. And we're back after some technical difficulties, but we got everything smoothed out now. How's it going, guys?
Going fine.
Going good.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Everybody have a good week?
Yeah, it's a long one, but it was a good one.
Yeah, well, we had its ups and downs.
Yeah, yeah. I'm still trying to get back into the swing of this whole 40-hour work week thing, but sure is nice when the paychecks come in.
Oh, yeah. Before we get started, I would like to say a warm and friendly welcome to all our new followers. So thank you very much for joining us for the ride.
Yes, thank you very much. We appreciate all the time you take listening to us. We really wish we'd get some feedback from somebody, though.
Yeah, exactly. It would be nice.
Or at least they acknowledge our existence. And as far as we know, they're not NSA bots.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
keep eye out on the website, mlctaskforce.com, for more posts coming.
Yep, yeah, we've been doing pretty good about putting new stuff up this past week, and it's been our efforts have been rewarded, so we'll try to stick with it.
Exactly. We're going to try to keep you guys entertained.
So, well, this is not the good year for celebrities. We got more memorials. I mean, we did, 10 minutes memorializing celebrities on our last show, and now there's been more. So, getting really tired of having to do this. But after we recorded our last episode, and before I'd even gotten started at editing it, we found out that one of the comic greats of the last 40 years passed away, Mr. Harold Ramis. I was real sad to see that. He was responsible for a lot more things than I expected he was responsible for. I remember him from Ghostbusters. That was the first thing I remember seeing him in, which was fantastic. I didn't realize that he directed Animal House or that he directed Groundhog Day.
Hmm. Yeah, he had his fingers in a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, I didn't realize it either. But, I mean, yeah, he was, well-loved and received, too, by everyone he worked with, what I've read. He just seemed like a normal guy. He had moved from L.A. to Chicago to get away from that life, and I think Chicago took him to heart. You know, they were real, the city as a whole, he really liked it from what I've read, and, they liked having him there.
Yeah, I knew he was primarily more of a writer than an actor, because you didn't see him in a lot of things. And if you did, he usually wasn't the lead character. He was always a supporting role. But I had no idea he had directed so much and written so many. I think he co-wrote most of Stripes with Bill Murray. And honestly, it's been so long I've seen that movie, I didn't even remember he was in it. But
yeah, he was in Stripes. He was also in another throwback from last week. He was in Heavy Metal.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's right. He did.
They had a lot
voices.
Of those Second City people in Heavy Metal, didn't they? John Candy was in it as well.
Yeah, here's the really thing that's going to fry your bean. Ivan Reitman produced and directed Stripes, but Ivan Reitman also directed Heavy Metal.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And they were shooting it at the same time they were shooting Stripes. So he would get done with Candy on the set of Stripes. Then he would drive him up to the recording booth to record his lines for the Den segment of Heavy Metal.
I think you mentioned that earlier several episodes ago when we were talking about the Heavy Metal movie. I think I remember you mentioning that.
Well, that's pretty cool. That's a good one. I always like that movie. The soundtrack's awesome, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just want to throw that in.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The score is available as well for those of you who have about 50 bucks to throw at it.
Ooh,
I don't know why. I mean, the score is not bad. It's horribly overpriced.
Yeah,
but that's a lot of money.
But for everyone who's trying to figure out what the hell we're talking about, we are not talking about Heavy Metal 2 FAKK.
Yeah, SHIT, as I like to call it.
Yeah. Yes, that's pretty bad.
But if you have the DVD of Ghostbusters, it's worth watching the commentary track because they do it Mystery Science Theater style. Harold Ramis and two other guys. They actually have the row of theater seats going on the bottom of the screen, and you see them sitting in the corner just like Mystery Science Theater.
I've got to check that because I've got an early edition of that, and I don't remember that being an extra. I'll have to go look for that now.
Yeah, I borrowed it from a guy I used to work with years ago, and he told me it was there. It was why I watched it. But, yeah, definitely worth it.
Oh, wow. I will definitely check that. That's cool.
Yeah. And in addition to Mr. Ramis, we had, Rando, I'll let you take these next two because you were the ones that brought them to our attention. So.
Yes. For those of you who are fans of classic, especially evening game shows, Jim Lang has passed on. He was the longtime host of The Dating Game.
Yep. God, I haven't watched that. I remember watching that with my grandmother Saturday, during the weekdays in the mornings. I hadn't thought about The Dating Game in years.
Wow.
That was a Chuck Barris show.
Oh, boy.
Right. He was in the CIA, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. He killed people.
Yeah, he did. If you believe him, he killed people. So the other one, actually, Jim Lang also had a very successful radio career, but unfortunately I don't know very much about that. But the other one that was just recently announced was Miss Sheila McRae, who did a lot of variety television style work. I think she appeared on stage in a few things as well, but she's probably best known for appearing on the Color Honeymooners and on the Jackie Gleason show during, I think, two different iterations of it, according to IMDb. But she played on that Color Honeymooners, she played the Alice Cramden character.
See, I had no idea that they had that. Well, I had no idea, A, that Jackie Gleason had had a show in the late 60s, early 70s. I remember watching reruns of the one for the 50s he had, the one he's most known for, and I had no idea that they had redone the Honeymooners that late either in color.
Wow. I don't know. I was never a big fan of the Honeymooners. I can't imagine how new ones would have been, but you never know.
Nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing.
Well, they will be missed.
Exactly.
So, and hopefully we can start a show and not have to do one of these memorials soon.
Exactly. Hopefully.
Yeah. But we did our Oscar predictions. Congratulations to Rando for picking the most correct answers this year.
Thank you. I didn't see any of them.
Yeah, me either.
I watched two of the movies that were up for Best Picture. I watched American Hustle, which was the one I was rooting for, even though I knew it wasn't going to win, and Gravity. And I've seen bits and pieces of 12 Years a Slave and Her because I had to walk in and out of the theaters doing checks when I was working there, but I never saw them all the way through. But did anybody watch The Ceremony?
No.
Me either. I haven't watched it in years.
It's just too painful.
So I'm curious if you could give like a 30-second mini review. What did you think of Gravity?
I thought it was a great movie. Technically, I did not think it was Best Picture material. I was rather surprised it got nominated. Sandra Bullock did a great job, and she definitely deserved the nomination. If she'd have won, I would have been upset because I thought there were much better performances. But I liked it. I would encourage people to see it, especially if you can see it on the big screen. Especially if you can see it in 3D. But, I didn't really see it as Best Picture material.
See, the only thing I know about it really is that it stars Sandra Bullock and George Clooney, and she's stuck out in space, and that Neil deGrasse Tyson, with much humor, tore the movie a new asshole. Neil deGrasse Tyson is a real-life physicist, by the way.
Yes. I can see if you're trying from Neil deGrasse Tyson's point of view, yeah, the physics of it were probably not correct. I mean, I doubt that whatever scenario would ever happen in real life. But it made for good film. I mean, as far as the special effects were the real star, the way they did the weightlessness and the camera work and everything. But, yeah, not Best Picture material, though.
The bit I heard with Tyson on the radio, the first thing he said, and I haven't seen the movie, so forgive me if I get this, you know, wrong via, you know, a third-party referee or whatever. But he was like, you know, Sandra Bullock's character was supposed to be like a medical doctor or something. How come she's doing repairs on my ship? You know, get her off my ship.
Yeah. Nah. Yeah. Yeah, I kind of find that a little difficult to believe, too.
Well, I mean, I haven't seen it either, but the impression I got, just what little bit I know about the story, it probably could have been told in like an hour. You know what I mean?
It was just fairly short movie.
I fix to say, I think it would almost have to be. It didn't seem like it had been that much. It would just be, like I said, like you were saying about the effects, you know, it's like, I don't know. It just didn't seem like something that would be nominated for anything other than the special effects. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I expected it would get a lot of those awards. I expected it would probably win all of them, and I believe it did, the majority of them anyway. I was rather surprised that it got nominated for Best Picture. But, you know, I don't get to vote on these things, so.
Yeah, there you go. Me either.
12 Years a Slave, from what I saw of it walking in and out of the theater, looked like a really good movie. It looks like a very powerful movie, a very intense movie.
Right.
And it did surprise me that it won. So, good for them. Especially that's a true story, too, which is, wow. It was pretty brutal, the bits I got to see of it.
Yeah, that's the general consensus I heard, was that it's a well-done film, but the subject matter and the way it was executed on screen, there are parts of it that are extremely difficult to watch.
Yeah, I can believe that. Yeah.
And the last thing I have to say about the whole 2014 Oscars is that a Miyazaki film lost to a fucking Disney musical. Hollywood can go to hell.
Frozen is another film I got to walk in and out of. Frozen looked like a good movie. It looks like it probably would be a very good movie, and it has been a juggernaut in sales. I mean, I checked the listings last week. It was still playing at the theater I used to work at, and I think it started, beginning of December, something like that, and it's still there.
That's rare these days.
Yeah. So, speaking of The Wind Rises, I may be going to see that tomorrow. It's playing at a theater here in town, so we'll see.
I would like to go see it.
I will report back.
But unfortunately, I don't know how my time's going to go because we're doing taxes tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll be doing taxes tomorrow, too.
I'm sorry. It's not a good way to spend. Well, I would say it's not a good way to spend your Sunday, but it's really not a good way to spend any day of the week.
No.
Exactly.
No.
Best of luck there.
Thank you. I don't know whether to bring my checkbook or my checkbook and some lube, because I think I'm going to get fucked by somebody.
I hope not for your sake. But, something I mentioned, or I was thinking earlier when you were talking about Ivan Reitman and directing Stripes and Heavy Metal at the same time. The reason the last episode was a week late was that Netflix finally put the last episodes of Breaking Bad up, and that was what my wife and I did the whole week, was watch Breaking Bad. And when we finally finished that, I went and looked up the trivia on Internet Movie Database, and apparently they were filming the Avengers movie on the same lot as they were filming one of the seasons of Breaking Bad. And Samuel Jackson is a huge Breaking Bad fan, and he had planned to do a walk-on as Nick Fury in one episode.
That would have been cool.
Yeah, but it didn't work out, apparently. Well, it's a little mini rant about IMDb. Okay. They will let... You can add trivia to these things. You can add information to these things. But apparently nobody's curating it anymore, because lately you can see the same trivia in there 3 or 4 times. Well, this was in there a couple of times. And one time it said this little walk-on didn't work out because they were filming Avengers in the daytime and Breaking Bad at night, and they couldn't get the schedule synced up. And then there was another one said he wanted to do it, but he couldn't get permission from Marvel or whoever to do it. So I don't know. But anyway, that's why it didn't happen. But that would have been cool.
Yeah, it would have been. That would have been awesome. Oh, my. Well, that should we'll go off on a little different tangent here now. It's a little idea, I guess. Who was the one that originally found the website?
I was. Yeah. I was.
Saul Poncho. Right.
Okay, Poncho, yeah.
Yeah, you go ahead. You tell the story.
Okay. I was coming home from work or the gym one night, and I can't remember. It doesn't matter. And I turned the radio on, headed on NPR, and they were doing a rerun of This American Life. And the topic of this one was superheroes. And I was listening to a couple of the segments on the way home, and they interviewed this guy, and I don't remember his name. He goes by Calamity John on this website. He's the curator of a website called Gone and Forgotten, where apparently he has like 15,000 comic books, all these like old stuff. And as he puts it on his website, which we'll put a link to in the blogs, the crummiest stories and characters in comics. And he was going through some of the characters he had found in some of these old comics that had just completely disappeared. Nobody had ever heard from him anymore. And with good reasons, you know, that they were really dumb, or they were just a product of their time and they didn't fit any time. And it was pretty entertaining little segment. And I sent these guys the website. We've kind of been perusing it. So we're going to kind of take that as a theme and go with it for the rest of this show. I think it was Lefty had the idea of expanding it out of comics and, you know, going into music and TV and all this other stuff. So we're just going to kind of wing it from
yeah,
here on out.
Yeah. Yeah, it should be interesting. Let's put it that
but
way.
But let me read this from Gone and Forgotten. It's called What is Gone and Forgotten? Gone and Forgotten is a blog dedicated to the bottom of the comic book barrel, the Secret War IIs, the Kitty Pryde and Wolverines, the Green Teams, and John Targets, and the one-time crypto swore like a drunken sailor on leave. I have to look that up.
Okay. I mean, he does throw out a bunch of interesting things. I mean, some of it's very obscure.
Yeah, I mean, extremely obscure. Like yeah. This thing that's front page right here that he posted on Mars the 6 was Yank and Doodle, America's Fighting Twins, who I'd never heard of before.
They kind of look like the ambiguously gay duo.
A little bit, especially in this one picture where they're both wearing the same green sweater with the gigantic M on it.
So does this bring up any memories for anybody else as far as comics or anything else?
Well, I remember reading Kitty Pryde and Wolverine. I didn't think it was that bad. I read Secret Wars 2, and it was that bad. It was terrible.
Well, Secret Wars 1 was practically that bad.
Well, yeah.
It had a couple of interesting moments, but that's about it.
Yeah, it was a bad idea overall, though. I mean, it's just kind of – I mean, how much did that thing – let's put all our heroes and all our villains in one place and have them fight each other.
Which is a concept they'd already done with, like, Contest of Champions and over and over. And, you know, X-Men versus Fantastic Four, X-Men versus Avengers.
Yeah.
You know, if you'll pardon me being very crude, it's like, you know, the X-Men are the Jews of the Marvel Universe. You know, everybody hates them. Yeah, it's which is another thing, too, that I wish was gone and forgotten, is these ridiculous cross-book story arcs that, A, don't tell a good story, and, B, just try to sell obscure titles because they have to, you know, you have to get this piece of information in this book. I bought a fucking Power Pack comic, okay?
Mutant Massacre. I know exactly which one you're talking about.
And yep. I read all through that stink burger of a comic. And I think there were literally two panels that had something to do with the story. I'm like, you bastards.
The only reason I think that got included was the lady that wrote that also wrote X-Factor at the time. And I'm certain that's the only reason that book – well, that increased the sales because I don't think it lasted too much longer after that. But.
Oh, good grief. So that was at a time I wasn't reading comics. I don't remember too much of that.
Yeah. Speaking of Power Pack, though, there's a Power Pack reference on this website a few pages down where they meet a giant purple Whoopi Goldberg.
Nice.
I'm not lying. Look for the favorite 26th century. Numinous.
Oh, my God.
What
giant
the
purple
fuck?
Whoopi Goldberg.
Why?
I don't know.
Is there a giant Ted Danson in blackface, too?
That's what you have to wonder.
What the fuck? Oh, well, not to harp on this website too much, but if you'll scroll down just a little bit further, it has Batman meets Jerry Lewis.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Do you remember those, you know, in the maybe late 80s, mid to late 80s, they tried to revive Scooby-Doo in, you know, it was Scooby-Doo and somebody. You know, like Scooby-Doo and the Three Stooges, Scooby-Goo and the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah.
Scooby-Doo
and Don Knotts.
Yeah, and Don Knotts. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I do remember those.
And, yes, I do too.
Speaking of, and we can tie this in here, gone and forgotten, at least I wish I could forget that little bastard, was Scrappy-Doo.
Oh, God.
I hated Scrappy-Doo.
I have never talked to anybody that didn't hate Scrappy-Doo, and I have to wonder how that even got out of off the drawing board.
Well, you know, even if it got off the drawing board, the fucker lasted forever.
Yeah.
I don't remember, honestly, because I stopped watching not long after they introduced that character, because I hated him that much.
I don't remember much as far as marketing with him. It was always Scooby-Doo stuff they sold. At least that's what I remember. You know what I mean? So I don't know why he lasted so long. I can't believe they were selling a bunch of Scrappy-Doo toys.
I honestly don't remember.
That's the only reason they do anything anymore is to make money off of something.
Well, they tried to soften cartoons to begin with. I mean, you know, Scooby-Doo actually started out as, it was supposed to be called like Mysteries Inc. or Mystery 5 or something like that. It was supposed to be more of a serious show. And then they decided to retool it for this gag comedy thing.
Well, I have to give them this. It worked for them, though.
The original season, and really only like the first two or three episodes of the original season where they actually did like this music montage, are the only ones that I can still watch. Everything else, it just grates on my nerves. it doesn't hold up.
That's funny. I tell you something off of the comic books. I guess I don't know if he's still around or not, but I used to always hate in the Superman comic books was Mr. Mixoplex.
I never understood why Superman didn't just hurl him into the sun or something, squash him like a grape. I mean, what an annoying little bastard.
Yep. That and all those they used to do. Well, you know, you've seen all the old comics. They used to have Superman family. Then they have Jimmy Olsen, Superman's pal, all that. I was like, geez.
Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane, Superman's girlfriend. Yeah.
How big of a loser must you have been to read a goddamn Jimmy Olsen comic?
While we're on the subject of Superman, does anybody actually remember the Supermobile?
No.
I remember the Spider-Man's Dune Buggy, but I don't remember the Supermobile.
it was this thing that looked like a egg with a rocket fin on the ass end of it, and supposedly it was designed to like shield Superman from the harmful like red radiation or some shit like that, and allow him to retain his powers and abilities, but only while he was sitting in the stupid cockpit of this thing. It could fly, obviously. It could go underwater. Right. If it was engulfed in flames, it had a tube that Superman could blow into, and air nozzles would sprout and blow out the flames on the outside of the thing.
It had
two arms with hands on it. And I don't mean like robotic manipulator arms like you would expect to see on, a normal, realistic thing. I mean, it had like anthropomorphic arms with five-fingered hands.
Oh, good grief. I do not remember that at all.
It is bad, bad, bad.
I have some vague memory of watching a Super Friends episode where Superman had lost his powers and he brought out some sort of, like, car.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. They did use it in an episode of Super Friends.
Okay. I vaguely remember that. But where is Henry when we need him? Henry could quote chapter and verse for this shit.
Yeah. The book I have with this supermobile in it, the whole book reads like a supermobile car commercial. Yeah. I mean, he's like breaking through walls and stopping crime with this thing. And these criminals, like I said, they shoot something in it that's supposed to, like, ignite the surrounding air and engulf it in this big ball of flame. And that was the thing about him blowing into a tube and blowing the flame out. And then they're like, what next? Will it actually grow some arms? And by God, it did. And it grabbed them. And he breaks out of the roof with them in tow. And one of them actually, this is how bad the writing was for this book. One of them actually goes like, it actually grew arms. Is there nothing beyond the ingenuity of Superman?
Oh, that's great.
And the villain, by the way, was named Amazo.
Oh, God.
Who was some sort of either genetically engineered being or android or whatever, who drop kicked the supermobile so hard that he knocked it through a time warp.
Oh, okay. Wow.
What and, were they smoking when they thought this
up? It gets better. Superman has to stop the supermobile's rapid acceleration because in the back seat, it has a back seat.
Of course it does.
Of course.
Is Lois Lane, who is being,
of course,
is being crushed by the G forces of the rapid acceleration. He's like, I've got to stop this or Lois will never make it. What does he do? Does he pull a lever? Does he press down on a pedal? Nope. He scoots his legs up, puts his feet on the dash, and just goes, and somehow magically stops it with his super grunty grimace face.
Did he take a super poop or something?
I was about to say.
Anyway, it just gets better and better. It's just,
what time period is this?
Oh, Jesus Christ, it had to have been the 70s, I think.
Because that sounds like something they would have done back in the 50s and 60s, you know, back during the Jimmy Olsen, Lois Lane, having their own book, Super Family.
Yeah.
Time period.
Yeah. Crypto, the Those Super Dog, bad. Super Girl,
yeah.
Super Boy.
Oh, yeah. There were Super Animal. There was a Super Animal team, I believe, at one time.
There might have been.
I think there was like a monkey and a horse and a dog. I don't know.
God, I don't remember. I don't know.
Oh, God, you just reminded me of something else from DC. It was Captain Carrot and the Zoo Crew.
Oh, I remember those. Vaguely I used to like that. Those when I was little. I liked those when
it had
I was little.
It had an anthropomorphic bunny as the Superman-type character. It had a pig made out of metal that they called
pig iron.
amongst other things.
Yeah, I remember that. They had a poodle that was like the Wonder Woman character.
I think you're
they had a turtle that was the Flash. And they had a cat that did something with magic. I'm not exactly sure what. But Captain Carrot would eat a carrot, and that's where he would have his superpowers. Some kind of meteor. It's probably a shame that I remember this.
A meteor. Think of all the important stuff that's not in your brain. Exactly. Because you had to make a space for this.
A meteorite fell to Earth, broke in two, and like, I remember for him specifically, it fell in like some carrots he was growing on his windowsill. Then he ate them because he was like this nerdy, wimpy guy, and he ate them and turns into this superhero with a costume, by the way, because these must have been hellacious carrots.
Yeah, I mean.
But yeah, I remember that. Sad to say.
And, you know, Marvel's not immune to this either. There was always Peter Porker the Spider Ham.
I was just about to bring that up, yes.
Oh, that's
Peter
right.
Porker the Spider Ham, yeah. Definitely gone and forgotten, thank God.
But I think DC does have the edge on all that bad comics, though. I think they did a lot more than Marvel did, as far as I remember. Anyway, I'll put it that way.
I don't know.
Marvel had its share, especially in the 70s when they got on that voodoo kick and on that martial arts kick.
Yeah, but I mean, let's be honest. I'd rather see a martial arts comic than a goddamn Jimmy Olsen. What the fuck is he going to do? Watch him, you know, go get coffee for everybody?
Jesus. With my super coffee blending skills, I'll make the entire team happy.
Exactly. And awake. I mean, at least with the fucking kung fu, there was some action.
Oh, no. It's 3:30. People are getting tired. I must get the coffee.
Exactly. Maybe they'll want donuts. I don't know. Would they want donuts? You know, that's the kind of shit you'd have to put up with that.
Hark! Like, the copier is out of paper.
Exactly. Like Lois Lane, you know, she's deciding what fucking skirt she's going to wear before she goes out with Superman or something. Like, I mean, come on, people.
To plug another website, there's a great website called superdickery.com. I'll put a link to this up too, but this website came about because the guy wanted to prove that Superman was a dick, and he would take all of these old comic covers or panels from comics where somebody was in trouble and Superman didn't care, wouldn't do anything about it, and he loved the Jimmy Olsen Superman's Pal comic because they had the most fucked up bizarre covers you've ever seen in comics. I mean, just like stuff you're reading and go. What? But he had another subsection of it dedicated to Wonder Woman being a bondage freak because she was always getting tied up. And
well, that's a long running theme with that entire.
Yeah. But yeah, I'll put links to that up too.
That's really a great website. I wish I could remember where I heard this, if it was on This American Life or something like that, but. They were talking about this dude who wrote a short story about Superman and this guy who wanted to aspire. I don't know if the guy was Jimmy or just some guy, but he was aspiring to be a sidekick or something like that. And Superman.
Aim high, dude.
Well, Superman's like, he's like, all right, you can hang out with me or whatever. And it just proceeded to illustrate Superman as just this colossal asshole. And it was stuff like, it was 10:30 at night. Superman invited me up to his trailer. You know, I spent the entire night with a nail and a phone book popping zits on Superman's back. It was so fucking funny. And if I could figure out what it is, I will post a link to it and I will buy a fucking copy of it.
Please do.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
That was funny.
Hysterical.
Well, that reminds me. Well, speaking of another bad character for DC, y'all remember Batmite?
Was that in the books? Because I know it was in the fucking Filmation show.
It was on the Filmation show, but I do believe it was in some of the older books.
I don't remember. It wouldn't surprise me, though.
The 60s books, I think it was in.
I hated that.
I think they have a Batman comic out now that is based on the old TV series.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because we were in the comic store yesterday, and I was, while my wife was getting her stuff, I was just looking through the racks. Of course, they got, 15 fucking Batman titles.
Right.
And I swear to God, one of them said, based on the classic TV series. That has to be the Adam West series from the 60s.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
I'm going to have to look back a little closer. It'd be probably terrible, I would imagine. Let's see how it could transfer over.
Wow. That's pretty bad.
Speaking of, I just finally finished my collection of the $6 Million Man DVD sets.
Speaking of gone and forgotten.
Laugh if you must.
Okay.
But I liked it, all right? Sue me.
Hey, whatever.
But
hey, I loved that show when I was a kid. That was my favorite TV show.
The interesting thing was in set number 5, that's for the 5th season, of course, they had an advertisement for what they called the $6 Million Man Season 6, which is a continuing adaptation of the storyline in comic book form.
Oh, wow.
So I'm actually a little bit curious about going to the comic store and having a look at a couple of those issues.
Hmm.
Check it out. Hell, it only costs comic nowadays, what,
$15? $15, yeah, something like that. Leg, stool sample.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. Yeah, that's something gone and forgotten. The days of the cheap comic book.
You ain't kidding.
They were 75 cents when I bought my first X-Men comic in high school.
Holy shit. I got you beat. I was buying them when they were 40 cent and 50 cent.
Oh, wow. For some reason, I never bought a lot of comics when I was a kid. My dad would get me one from the grocery store every now and then, but I didn't make a point of going out and actually buying them and reading them until high school. So I don't know. I guess I'm a late bloomer.
My dad was too damn cheap to buy anything for me like that, so I was just kind of always had to read off my cousin's comics and stuff. I remember that. I just had something else in mind. Damn it, I just forgot it. Oh, okay. Talking about obscure animation stuff, do y'all guys remember the old Godzilla cartoon?
Yeah. With Godzuki? Yeah.
Godzuki.
Godzilla and Godzuki, yes.
And Godzuki. Yep, I remember that. That's on Netflix now.
Oh,
that's just frightening. Bad. That's some frighteningly bad Hanna-Barbera animation.
Oh, yeah. They churned the crap out in the late 70s, early 80s. It was like a factory.
And, oh, my God. Anybody remember Devlin?
Devlin.
Vaguely.
As a motorcycle ones, like a circus stuntman motorcycle adventure type thing.
I don't remember that one at all.
Do you remember the robotic Three Stooges?
Yes. I think it was the robotic.
Robotic Three Stooges.
That's how well I remember it.
Well, don't say a damn thing about me remembering the goddamn Captain Carrot thing.
The Robotic Stooges, yes. And the Banana Splits.
I remember them.
Yep.
They had a lot of shows like that in the 70s. There was
Bay City Rollers.
Other things too, like Far Out Space Nuts. And Sigmund and the Sea Monsters.
No, I remember Sigmund and the Sea Monster.
Ark 2. Yeah. Boy, I loved the shit out of that when I was a kid. That was so amazing to me. And then I got a copy of it as a gift, and I popped it on, and I was like, holy fuck.
Childhood memories down
and
the
that
drain.
That just brings to mind, I mean, for me, for this category, all I could think of was like very broad things, like Anything and Everything by Filmation.
Right.
Yeah.
Live action, cartoons. I mean, they just practically ruined everything. Now, Ark 2 was an interesting thing as a concept, honestly. It was just executed very, very poorly because those fuckers were cheaper than Scrooge.
Right. Give a brief synopsis of it because I'm sure a lot of, I don't remember this show, or if I do, I don't remember the
name. Ark 2 is kind of like a post-apocalyptic thing where these scientists are driving around in this giant thing that looks like a reject from Damnation Alley. And no, you think I'm kidding? Look it up. The big thing was they had like a guy who could fly around with a jetpack, and they had a little car with cool little doors that folded down and shit. And of course, they had a monkey. And they had a hot chick scientist and whatnot. But they were running around, and it was basically it was a live action adventure show, and they built it off of bits and pieces of other shows. I mean, this arc, this Damnation Alley looking thing, it was built on a frame of a semi 18 wheeler, and the nose of it had this real aerodynamic shape to it, the cockpit area. And I found out when I was looking, listening to the commentary track and shit, that was actually the front end of a shuttle from Jason of Star Command.
That was the next thing I was going to bring up was Jason of Star Command
and Space Academy, which starred Jonathan Harris, I think.
Yeah, I remember Space Academy.
And those were all a bunch of live action turds from Filmation.
Yeah,
but they took shows that were beloved and ruined them, like Tom and Jerry and Droopy.
Oh, their Tom and Jerry. Droopy was bad. Oh,
they all deserve to burn in hell for eternity for what they did to that. But then they had their own shit, too. Most notably, He-Man, She-Ra, Brave Star.
She-Ra.
And
She-Ra.
I do have to admit to one that I would like to try again, but I'm scared shitless to do so. They did an adaptation of Flash Gordon.
Oh, Is that the one that was, you can't find anywhere anymore because of all the Nazi references?
I honestly don't recall that particular aspect of it. All I remember is a lot of rotoscoping.
I don't either.
And a lot of bad aim on the laser fire.
Huh.
I remember watching a Flash Gordon animated thing. I don't remember if it was by Filmation. I remember really, really liking it, too. But I've heard you can't find it anywhere now because there's all these references to Nazis in it.
I think in terms of production value, that's probably one of the highest ones they had. But even still with that, I mean, Filmation's trademark is that they will reuse anything to save a buck. Anything.
Well, they were crap.
And
yeah,
all
they
of their supporting characters were shit. They were always these little comic little goofball things. I mean, Batmite in the Bat, and they did a version of Batman and Robin. That Batmite was in there.
Right.
In the He-Man, it was Orko. And now you talk about you being embarrassed about remembering shit.
yeah, you keep I'm just kicking back and enjoying this.
Right ahead. Your time will come, pal.
Oh, don't worry.
And folks, if you think Rando's bad for this, if you could only meet Henry.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
So
exactly.
Yeah, I mean they would come up with these awful characters, but I think their crowning achievement that sunk them ultimately was they did a theatrical movie called Happily Ever After, which was supposed to be a continuation of the story of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
I remember when that came
and
out.
I do not remember.
Dig this, people! Snow White was voiced by Irene Cara, a black woman.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah.
I do not remember that.
I don't remember that, but I do remember that
starring
movie.
Starring the voices
out.
Of Ed Asner, among others.
Wow.
I'd ask you to look it up, but fuck it.
That's
all right, who's
funny.
Next? Who's
wow.
next? I've been ranting for a while now.
I got one I just thought of. You remember the old Shazam?
Oh, yeah. That was more
and
Filmation stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that was Filmation, too. Okay. I remember Ice.
Yeah, that was that. Filmation, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. I remember thinking she was hot when I was little.
She was hot.
Yeah. The woman scientist from Mark II was hot. I mean, I'll give him a little bit of credit on casting.
That's funny.
Yeah. Shazam, they had that guy. What was his name? Billy. He had that, like, huge, fucking big, black feathered hair.
Yeah.
They
rode around
in
a Winnebago.
Yeah.
They rode around in a Winnebago, and he had this guy named, old guy named Mentor with him. That was his name, Mentor. And
yeah,
he had
what
this
he
little,
did.
Yeah. He drove the fucking Winnebago is what he did. And they had, I could never figure out the little device or whatever it was he had with all the LED, all the lights on it that looked like something off your Light Bright, and he would, I don't know.
Speaking of bad live action and versions of shows, comics even, what about the old live action Spider-Man?
Oh, I remember
God.
That. I've seen
I
those.
I forgot about that.
The only
that.
One that's
I've
that
seen
even
those.
Worse than that is the Japanese live action Spider-Man.
I didn't know they
oh,
did
the
one.
Oh, the theme song
doesn't surprise
is
me, but I know they
hysterical.
Did
I will be putting that up on the blog.
You have to. I've got to see that.
Yeah, I
got to
hear that.
It's, I mean, you're used to, like, you know, the Spider-Man, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It was a thing that were obviously appealing to very young kids, but the opening of the theme for the Japanese version was, yeah, wow! And I'm like, what the fuck? And they go so far as to give Spider-Man a mech.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Great.
It is
yeah.
hysterical.
That's what Spider-Man needs. Like Superman needs a
yeah,
car.
Yeah, it is hysterical.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Well, speaking of that, then, do you guys remember, this will hit close to your heart, Rando, the live-action Captain America that they used to
they
have?
They did two. Actually, there were a set of serials done in black
yeah.
and white. But they did
yeah,
two
had
horrible TV movies.
Horrible movies. That's the ones I
they
remember.
They did two
the
horrible
wrote,
TV
driving
movies.
Driving in the van.
And then they did a yeah. shit version of it in 1990 that was supposed to actually come out into the theaters. I actually have two copies of the teaser poster for that film for its theatrical release that never happened. And, yeah, it's just bad. Well, who was the guy? Reb Brown. That was the guy.
Yes.
Reb Brown did it.
Butch Deadlift.
He
Blast, hard cheese. Big, McLarge, huge. That's him. That's David Ryder from Space Mutiny, the Mystery Science Theater classic.
Yeah, he was in those awful television
Smash,
movies.
Smash, lamp jaw.
The shield was transparent, people. Come on. And in one of the movies, I think we went over this before. One of the movies, his costume looked like a fucking vest. Like he burgled Evel Knievel and then took off.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Oh. Do y'all remember the very short-lived Flash TV series from the early 90s?
Yeah.
I remember that.
One of them starred David Cassidy as the villain.
Oh, my God, I don't remember that.
That was a piece of stinky cheese, let me tell you.
It started out well. I remember my roommate and I really liked it at first. Uh-huh. And then it just went right down the toilet.
There were a bunch, like in the 90s, there was a bunch of superhero stuff that came and fell quickly, like Mantis.
Yeah. Remember Mantis. Manimal.
Yeah,
I remember Manimal.
And that horrible Tron ripoff, Auto Man.
Yes. Oh, God. That was something I was going to bring up.
That was terrible. I remember. I still have bad waking memories of a segment of an episode of that where Auto Man, a computer-generated man who can actually exist in the real world, who has a car.
He turns into a car.
Actually, he had the little cursor, like, bit from Tron, and the cursor would draw a car, and he could drive around in it and shit. But his creator and he were walking through a party, and there were a bunch of console video games at the party, and Auto Man is going like, "Yes, I just heard from my friend Zaxxon that the party we're looking for is over there in the other room." It was horrible. Oh, my God. It's like, I would love to have been there at the meeting to know what drugs they passed around to get somebody to pay for that.
That's just somebody slapping something together.
I remember in the early days of the Sci-Fi Channel, before they started producing their own programming, they would take old TV shows, old sci-fi-related TV shows, and run old movies and run them all day. I remember watching Buck Rogers. They did a whole half a day of Automan.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
And I remember watching. I tried watching an episode because I remember the TV series, and I tried watching it, and I'm like, my God, what a smug bastard this guy is. I just wanted to punch him. I couldn't make it more than 5 or 10 minutes
into it. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. That's funny. Oh, my gosh. So many memories, man.
Whew. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I guess we could probably come back to this topic again some other time, because we're running out of time now.
Not really. We could pad if we really want to. I mean, shit. TV is this vast, broad toilet of ideas that we could grab from.
Exactly.
Yep. The vast wasteland.
We haven't even.
Yep. This is where we need your feedback, people. If you like something like this, let us know. We'll be happy to do other shows like this.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is just us making shit up because we had no plan coming into this one whatsoever. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you like that and want us to do more of that, then let us know, please.
Exactly. Now, we have to tell them about next week's show, which we don't have anything in concrete yet except for the bad movie review.
Yeah, I think it's my turn this time.
Yes, yes, so, it is.
Yeah, we're going to be reviewing the, I don't hesitate to call it a classic, but it's a movie called The Curse of the Swamp Creature that was directed by the guy that did Mars and These Women, which is a classic B-movie, so... Hopefully we will live to tell the tale.
Oh, my. Yep. Well, we hope you enjoyed the show. And like I said, give us some feedback. Go to MLCTaskForce.com. Shoot us a line. We're also on Facebook and, I believe, Twitter.
Yes, we are on Twitter. Mm-hmm. One of these days I'll remember to actually start tweeting. I haven't done it yet.
We're also on iTunes and good old-fashioned email. At MLCTaskForce@gmail.com.
Yep, and we are also on Stitcher. You can download us there and listen to us on iTunes as well. Just do a search for Midlife Crisis. Yes, we're trying to take over the world, but we have to compete with the NSA, so we're probably going to lose. But
yeah, probably. Yeah.
Well, anyway, we'll be back in another week or two, and hope everyone is well until then.
All right, have a good one, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Bye.